You're listening to Our Backyard, KXRW.LP Vancouver on 99.9 FM and streaming everywhere at KXRW.FM.
Today we're talking with Dan White of the Kiggins Theater about the past, present, and future of this historic landmark, and we're going to discuss Brad's movie choices.
You're listening to News of the Past. Real people, real problems, right here on KXRW. November 29, 1871. The territorial legislature cut Clark County down to the smallest size it has ever had. Its northern boundary was a line drawn directly from the point of the northern fork of the Lewis River, about opposite the present Woodland, extended due east to Skamania County line. November 6, 1875. From the Pioneer Items. Log houses are gradually being superseded by those of more modern and commodious forms of lumber and furnished housing. These houses are more, quote, neatly and tasteful. Log cabins are quoted as saying, "What did we ever do to you?" November 5th, 1917. The paving of the Fourth Plain Road got underway. The improvement to extend it 1.5 miles from the city limits east. It was paved with bitulific pavement. If you're like me, you have no idea what that is. But after intense research, it turns out that it's nothing more than a small mixture of stone, asphalt, and enough cement to hold all the compounds together. Traffic may resume November 22nd. Even back then, they got the holes fixed faster than they can today.
That's your News of the Past, brought to you by KXRW. Real people with real problems. Now back to your regularly scheduled program with B.T. Michaels and Brad Richardson, two people with lots of problems.
KXRW would like to thank Craft Cannabis, our exclusive cannabis sponsor, for supporting our radio community. Their wide variety of products range from edibles, pre-rolls, concentrates, vapes, CBD topicals, tinctures, and much more. Craft Cannabis now has two locations in Vancouver. The newest shop is on Andreessen Road off of Patton Parkway next to Home Depot. The Mill Plain location is located in the Heights Shopping Center. Customers 21 years of age and over can order online or in person. Both locations are open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information available at craftcannabis.com.
Brad, I'm going to break the fourth wall a little bit.
All right.
Okay. So sometimes we have to record these segments, you know, a little ahead of time. We both have jobs. I travel a lot. You're obviously busy. The museum's booming.
Yeah.
But we're recording this in November right now.
Yes, we are.
Which tells me something that finally... October is over.
Yep.
Halloween is done.
Yeah.
We are now moving into the holiday season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Christmas stuff's been up since, you know, 3 weeks ago. So yeah.
So I'm really excited. I didn't have any kids that trick or treat in my house this year because my kids just don't do that anymore. And I have been dying to find out how this year's trick or treating Halloween experience was.
Well, I think we have an expert that can help us with that. I think we have Little Miss M here.
Little Miss M, how are you?
Good.
Good. And so, you know, Halloween just passed us. We just went through it. Did you trick or treat this year?
Yeah.
What'd you go as?
I went as a race car driver.
Yep, a race car driver.
That is super awesome. And you went trick or treating, door to door knocking?
Yeah.
Did you get some good candy?
Yes.
Did your dad eat all the candy?
Nope.
No. Did I threaten to eat all the candy?
Nah.
Well, he's nicer than mine. My dad ate all of my candy all the time. I don't know. But that is super awesome. But now, like I said, we have spilt into the holiday season. This is everybody's favorite time of year. Is this your favorite time of year?
Probably.
She's indifferent. She's not going to commit. Yeah, she's like, you know. She's not going to commit.
Yeah, I like March. March is a good time of year. Thanksgiving is what's next. Do you like Thanksgiving?
Yes.
What is your take on turkey or ham? Which one would you prefer to have?
Ham.
Ham? That's me too.
Yeah, I don't know.
We have some disagreement on the other side of the table. Okay, then shortly after that, we have Christmas, which is like the holiday that all kids, for the most part, look forward to. Do you like Christmas?
Yes.
You got it? Yes. We were confident. Yeah. Anything like super awesome you love about Christmas the most?
I get to hang out with my family and I get presents for a while.
Yeah.
super cool. That's what my kids love about it too. For me, I love how colorful the city gets.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, like all the town tree and the houses, and everyone just seems like to be in really good moods around the Christmas season. Now, as someone who is obviously an expert, which you are, this is going to be out of left field, but have you ever heard of the mountain whale?
No.
No, you have not. Well, this is something that we are trying to uncover, and you're going to have to kind of hear this out, and you're going to have to tell us if you think the mountain whale exists. But in our last show, Brad had talked about the mountain whale, which is a mythical whale that perhaps is on the mountain. Do you want to refill us in on what's going on with that?
Yeah, no, we've just continued to try to search. We haven't found anything yet, but that's the thing. There are more tales from the mountain because we found a weird mountain shack.
A mountain shack?
Just on the random, just randomly on the property. We had some friends that were over, and one of our friends went and said, hey, I'm gonna go look down towards the creek because we thought there might be a little bridge there. And he started going down, and he's just off in the distance, you know, and you can't see him through all the trees and the brush and everything. And all of a sudden, I just hear, there's something down here. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, there's a shack. And I'm like, all right, let's go get my shoes on. And we went down and we checked it out. There are no signs that anything bad has happened
The
shack. It looks like it was probably for animal use, and we're hoping that we'll eventually be able to clear around it and use it. But there's just a random shack we didn't know was on the property up on the mountain. It's just the way the mountain is. There's hidden things.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like a treasure around every turn.
Yep.
So did you go see the shack?
No, we didn't go down, but we saw pictures.
Saw pictures of the shack. And what was your take on it? Does it look legit? Does it look scary? What does it look?
It looks cool.
Does it look cool? Like something cool was hidden in there maybe?
Yeah.
Some sort of, oh. This mountain fascinates me. I mean, between the whale, the peacock.
Yep.
The shack. It's just every day or every month when we come together, it grows, and it's just...
There's so many tales coming from this mountain.
I like it. It's like our little Narnia right now.
What did you think of the peacock, Maddie?
It was cool.
Yeah?
It had like so much cool, but I wish I saw it when all of its feathers were up.
Those are, oh man, yeah, they're spectacular when they're like that. I lived in a place that used to have albino peacocks, so they were all white. And so it would, I have some feathers from it at home, but I would do a big fan, but it was all white and silver feathers. And it was pretty cool.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't even know there was an albino peacock.
I didn't either. And maybe they're not called albino peacocks, but it was all white. So I was going with albino peacock.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So that worked out well. Yeah, you know, on my end, I couldn't find much about the mountain whale. I did learn, 2014, 2015, and earlier this year in March, there were whales spotted coming up the Columbia.
Oh, really?
So it doesn't sound like it is that unheard of for a whale to make its way to the Portland area. Yeah, maybe do some shopping.
Yeah.
Catch a good bite to eat. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think they come up here for that? Or?
I think they could stay in the ocean because the ocean has lots of creatures they could
That's do. True. I just thought maybe our groceries were a bit cheaper than the oceans.
Yeah. But easier to get fish at Safeway.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And the only other thing I could find is there is a restaurant on the other side of the Columbia across from Vancouver that's supposed to have part of a whale skeleton in it from a whale that had come up the river.
Really?
Yes, but I have not located the name of said place.
Wow, there's just a whole story unfolding around it does. In this area.
It's blowing my mind, though, ever since you said that. And, you know, every now and then I got to go on, and I've been asking some people, some of the locals, nobody locals, they think I'm crazy now.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, tell me about the mountain whales. And they're like, we cannot, sir. So that's where we are with that right now. And I'm really hoping, I mean, this is probably going to bleed into 2022.
Oh, yeah.
The hunt.
This is ongoing. It's a saga.
It is. It may never be resolved. Do you think we're ever going to find this mountain whale?
Well, a whale cannot go into a mountain. It would probably freeze because they're usually in the water, but the mountains are very cold.
They are.
So I think that it's probably not going to be true.
We don't think that it's in the shack?
No.
It wasn't a mountain whale shack.
No. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so glad we brought in an expert for the change into the holiday season.
Yep.
I am thrilled that it's here. But are you going to hang out and listen to Dan talk a little bit about the Kiggins Theater and his experience in Hollywood?
Yeah.
You look like somebody who wants to know all that information. let's go ahead and get to Dan and see what's going on with Kiggins.
KXRW programming is made possible by the generous support by David Dansky with David's Toys, buyer and collector of old toy trains, including Lionel, Flyer, Ives, and Marks. He is interested in buying old transportation-related toys as well as toy trains from the late 1800s to the 1960s. David offers appraisals for fellow toy train lovers as well. David's Toys can be reached at 360-576-1602. That's 360-576-1602.
Hey, welcome back to Our Backyard. As always, I am BT Michaels, and I am here with Brad. Brad, say hi.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going well. I know you were talking to them, but I'm going to go ahead and take the spotlight from that. Brad, I am excited because we have hit a milestone. Our second show, the second show that we have done, our first even show, and I just think the little things should be celebrated.
Absolutely. You really know you've made it when you have two shows.
No, it's true, and it's, you know, our first show, 30 days ago when we started this adventure, okay, 30 days.
Wow.
I did not think we were going to get to our first even number.
Nope, not at all. Crash and burn. Very quick.
Yeah, absolutely. I did our first show with a parachute on. I was ready to jump out of the plane as it was going down. But I was sitting at home and I was thinking, okay, our first show was so good. Like, how do we top it? Like, who can we bring in? What celebrity can we bring in order to make this second show the biggest show that has probably ever been in radio history? So we got no other than a celebrity from our area, Dan Wyatt.
There we go.
He is here today with us. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great. How are you? I was all set to do my Brad impression. Hey, how's it going?
How's it going?
He could jump in if you're not available sometime. I'll just have him jump
That's
in.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't know about celebrity, but congratulations on making it past Prime.
Yes, I was nervous. It was iffy for a moment, you know? Like, you're listening to it, you're like, oh, what's the feedback going to be? And then, you know, before you know it, show number two.
Off and running now.
Divisible by itself.
Absolutely. But we were so excited for this. This topic that we're about to talk about, the Kiggins Theater, it plays on multiple levels because it is such a Vancouver landmark.
Yep.
You know it when you drive by it. You may not know about it until this show, like, you know, the backgrounds of it. But also, we're recording almost literally inside of it, the same building.
Yeah. We're getting real feet. Real meta here.
I know. Yeah. The show has layers. Layers now, like, because of that.
Coming to you live and direct, almost, from Kiggins Theater.
Almost, yep.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so we're super excited to have you here and really kind of get into, you know, the past, present, and future of the Kiggins and what it is that you hope to let everybody know when they drive by. You know, we want to give them food for thought. And so this will be a really good opportunity for you.
Yeah, you know, and it's really funny because, I mean, for years, obviously, you and I have known each other, and I've done tours out in front of the Kiggins Theater. And the theater is such an iconic, you know, landmark for Vancouver. But when you walk people over to the theater and you're doing, you know, a walking tour or whatever, right, and you say, okay, well, you know, here's the Kiggins Theater, and you ask them, well, why is it called Kiggins? Silence.
Really?
Yeah, people don't know. So many people have no idea why it's called the Kiggins Theater. And it's one of these things that J.P. Kiggins, who it's named after, there's just this big disconnect in that history. I mean, most people are like, well, I don't know. I mean, I remember it as, you know, the $2, you know, double matinee theater that I would come into for years. And so we ended up figuring out that there is this big miss in the story of this really significant person of Vancouver. And so, you know, a little background on J.P. Kiggins. He was a prolific politician. He was a builder. He was a person who just did so much in early 20th century Vancouver. And he was born in Tennessee in 1868. And soon, you know, in his younger years, he eventually moved to Washington, D.C. And eventually he got into some trades. He would do some, you know, building. It said that he had an apprenticeship as a carpenter for a time. And then after that, he eventually went and enlisted in the United States military, and that's how he ended up out here in Vancouver. He ended up getting stationed at Vancouver Barracks.
Okay.
And so from there, he spent some time with that. He was here during the Spanish American War. He served in that, and then eventually he was honorably discharged from service. And he actually ended up taking a little time that he left Vancouver. He liked Vancouver, but he was kind of trying to find his way, find his wealth. He ended up in Alaska for a period of time, did that, and then eventually he came back down here. And from there, he ended up establishing his construction business, and he had some office in Vancouver, some office in Portland, and then soon after that, he decided to become a politician. He ran unsuccessfully for city clerk, and then eventually was elected pretty much that same year to the city council, and then a year after that, was elected to mayor. And he was mayor numerous times. It's hard to tell exactly how many times because the terms of early Vancouver mayors kind of oscillated between like a year term, yeah. And then there was like 2 year terms. But he served as mayor until about, I think, 1914 or so. And what happened is around that same time, Washington State ended up having changes in voting laws, and women were given the vote. And this was on the wave of temperance that was being pushed through. And Kiggins wasn't exactly the great temperance advocate, I guess you could say.
He was Roman Catholic.
Yeah. And so he ended up getting having an opponent that ran against him that was a temperance candidate, and he ended up losing that election. So his times as mayor weren't consecutive. They were all kind of broken up. But it was during that time that he went and became a Clark County commissioner, and he actually served on the Interstate Bridge Commission. Okay. And he was one of the people on this side of the bridge that was most instrumental in getting the Interstate Bridge built in 1917. So
well, that's absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, pretty wild stuff. So after, you know, doing that work, getting a giant bridge built, he came back and ended up serving some more terms as mayor. And during this time, he built a number of theaters, owned a number of theaters. And his swan song was the Kiggins Theater, which you own today. And that's kind of a real bullet point, super quick history of J.P. Kiggins. There's a lot more. And for my notes, just so you reference, I looked at historylink.org for the information that was, you know, talking about Kiggins.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you, like he was saying, like now you're the owner and operator of it. And so really, you know, we want to be able to give a kind of a good background into when the theater first started going into restoration, any example of what it looked like in the past compared to what it had to start going through and modifications to get to where it is now.
Oh, it's an evolving process. First, I want to say though, as I like to go by the term captain, not because it's some grandiose position, but one first and foremost is because it's fun and not such a corporate CEO, owner, operator, president, whatever those terms are that
typically, captain of the Kiggins.
Captain of the Kiggins. And it actually fits because I look at the Kiggins as it's this grand old ship, right? And it existed before me. Hopefully it exists after me, long after I'm gone. And I just happen to be the guy in charge of it right now at this point in time. So a lot like naval traditions, captains come and go on ships, but the ships continue on. So I really like that title, one, because it's fun and it kind of gives us a fun nautical naval thing to work with as far as theme, but also, you know, it designates the importance of this vessel, or really what it is importance to the community. Right, it's not absolutely mine. It's not mine to do what I want with it. I mean, I try to keep it afloat, yeah, and keep it sailing straight. But for the most part, it's I'm the steward of it.
So I think one of the things to help contextualize why you fit so well with the USS Kiggins is your own backstory. So can you talk a little bit about your background and your journey to the Kiggins Theater?
Yeah, it's I'll try to nutshell as much as I can. Not super native to Vancouver, but almost. I came here as a wee lad from, to borrow some Kiggins Irish, from Texas, but been functionally growing up in Vancouver since 75. Of course, I had my stints away. I went to Pullman for 4 years and needed something a little bit more entertainment-oriented, so I actually headed to L.A., went to film school down there, and stayed there, worked in the industry, had a great time, loved it. Don't listen to all the naysayers about California. It's actually spent my 20s down there and had a blast. However, little kids came along, and that brings a new set of circumstances to life and makes things a little more complicated, especially being so far removed from family. So
right,
moved back home. Didn't land in my stomping grounds of Salmon Creek, but downtown was starting to kind of come into its own. And knew that was the place I wanted to be. I got too urbanized in L.A., I guess. So couldn't go back to the suburbs quite, but was here and doing the dad thing and got a little restless, a little antsy, and decided I needed to put my toe into a business. And previous to the Kiggins, I had a vintage soda shop / entertainment venue, mostly live music or kid-oriented youth venue. I guess established myself as the entertainment guy on Main Street. No, that was terribly difficult. Wasn't a whole lot going on as far as nightlife then. And Bill Lee, who had been, bought Kiggins, I think circa 2007, mm-hmm. Right about the time I moved back. Theater closed by his own goodwill and his own good pocketbook. He got Kiggins renovated and reopened and realized that was not his forte to run something like that or an entity, but subsisted off day-to-day income levels. So he reached out to me at the soda shop. And, of course, being a movie guy, being a former film schooler and lifelong movie fan, as many of us were, mm-hmm. Grew up movie theater and enchanted by stories that we saw and experiences that unfolded before our eyes. Kiggins was really the most opportune thing for me to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not only putting my education, you know, what I learned in film school and even broadcast to some degree and entertainment components of my past, but my love and passion for movies and keeping that alive. And really when people talk about the Kiggins and they love the architecture and the nostalgia and all the, you know, I grew up going there and I love the look of it on Main Street, and the neon and all that stuff. That's really more of a facade and a superficial thing. Really what I wanted to do, the building was overhauled, like I said, by Bill Lee, but I overhauled the programming and tried to revitalize movies and keep an interest in movies going. And it's been lost. And I think, you know, the pandemic shutdown, especially for movie theaters, that got hit the hardest. You know, hopefully that motivation to watch movies in a shared collective experience, not necessarily the big technology and all that kind of stuff you get from the multiplexes, but just the idea of going to a space, making an effort to join with others to enjoy a story, it hasn't been lost. So still fighting that fight and keeping the ship sailing and hopefully people want to join us on that cruise.
And I think that's...
And not do, stay home with their dinghy.
And I think that's what's important, especially about the Kiggins, is like you were saying, it's that shared experience. You know, you can watch a movie at home,
yep.
You can stream it, but there is something about going into a theater, especially one that's designed the way that the Kiggins is, where it's a whole immersive experience.
Yep.
So you're not just getting a movie, you know, you're getting that interaction with the other people in your community and the smells of the popcorn and the smells of all this stuff. And I think that's why it's so important.
And do you remember the the first time you really engaged with the theater experience? Because I'm imagining something like that has helped push you towards this.
Oh, I've got tons of movie memories. I mean, not to say that they're... I mean, I was just an avid moviegoer. I didn't really... The venue itself, I'd love to say that my first movie was at the Kiggins, but that's not true.
Yeah.
And actually, I think it had been closed down by the time I'd starting to go to movies as a mm-hmm. toddler. Mm-hmm. But... I definitely remember the first time I saw Star Wars, Superman, E.T., you know, all the hits from the late 70s, or the Spielberg era, let's put it that way. Didn't see Jaws, too young for that. But, just those things were just burned these things into me. And maybe I'm a weird kid. Maybe the movies were just like going to the fair or anything else. It was just fun activity to do. But to me, they made a definite impression on me. I remember those theaters. I was at Jansen Beach to see Back to the Future. I was at Vancouver Mall when I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark. I was at the old Cascade Park. I think there were Moyer Theaters back then, or Act 3, somewhere in that transition, when I saw Batman. I remember where I saw those movies for the first time.
Yeah.
So, you know, those movies can be memories can be made of the Kiggins. And I do have Kiggins movie-going memories. My first time I can remember, I think, was Starman. The one that most stands out to me, though, it's kind of fun, because it was Kiggins and it was downtown back in the day and things were a little rougher. And, you know, when you charge such a affordable admission, it brings a certain kind of crowd. And it did. And it was a packed house, but a fight broke out in the middle of a movie. And
nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the true beer bottles rolling down the aisle. And
movie and a
smoke. Yeah, exactly.
That's that immersive experience.
That was the double feature. The fight the and the movie. The funny thing was it was Karate Kid, so I don't know if those guys were just really getting into it.
They were just really into the movie. Yeah.
Sweep the leg.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm Cobra Kai.
I think somebody got their ear swept with a piece of popcorn, and that's what started it all.
Oh, man.
That's funny you mention that. Like I was thinking earlier about my movie experiences, but I remember I was 5 years old when Batman 89 came out. But I remember I saw it at the drive-in, and I remember it as clear as day as like my first real big movie experience.
And I would challenge you to remember the exact moment you watched some video at home.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yep. No, I remember Batman 89 also because we stayed up till the premiere night. So I think we saw like the midnight showing, and I remember standing in the line at the Lloyd Center Theater, and that's when we went to go see that.
Yeah. I'd never hear anybody go, I remember Top Gun, renting it and bringing it home and watching it on the Zenith.
Right. Forgot to rewind it, had to pay $11 at Blockbuster.
Those are the memories you don't hear.
Right. No, it's always when you go to the theater.
So whenabouts did you enter into the picture of, you know, of Keegan's?
It was March 1 of 2012. So just past my 9 year, coming up on 10 years actually in what, three?
So you come in and what are your first thoughts? Like you're coming into this
oh gosh, naive like anybody else going into small business. My first thought was like, I think I like to own my own business. Don't do it. Of course, you know, but you know, hindsight 2020. But I don't regret it. I love it. It's a perfect job for me to be doing here in Vancouver. But I am naive. I mean, I worked in production, I worked in post-production, marketing, all those things kind of in the Hollywood side of the business. I never worked in exhibition, not even as a popcorn sweeper as a kid. So didn't know how the theater business actually worked behind the scenes.
Okay.
What a big shocker was how the licensing works.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little bit more free for all than it actually is. The only analogy I can properly offer is, let's say you opened a restaurant, you went to whoever, food distributor, Cisco or somebody, and said, I need to buy hamburger meat and buns and bread. And they told you, well, you're only buying this specific. Actually, there's stuff you can't buy. And if you do buy this stuff.
The nice lobster.
Yeah. Yeah. Not at any price. If you do buy this stuff, you're going to be open 7 days a week, having them dictate your operating hours and only be able to buy one variety. You know, you've only got 10 plates. Well, you can only buy one kind of hamburger meat.
Sounds real profitable.
Yeah.
Nobody's in the movie business for the money unless you head south. So yeah, it's very challenging, the licensing and the programming side of it. And you think it'd be easier with older movies, but older movies tend to be a little more hit and miss.
Right.
And higher price, actually. There's usually guarantees that come along with that versus a new movie out of the gate that only has a percentage of licensing. And
so I'm interested to hear. So you took over the Kiggins, you know, here you are for the first time, you're going to program out a theater. Talk a little bit about that first experience.
How honest should I be? This is a fully, fully honest program, or are we at marketing?
No. As honest as
you. You know, I know Vancouver. I love Vancouver. I do what I do because I remember the days of being up here, and it's can be a little dry. It's a nice community. It's a nice place to raise a family, but there's not a whole lot to do or in the way of variety. So let's put it this way. I feel like we're having to groom a little bit of a film community here.
Mm-hmm.
There's not the, you know, there's a good fanboy base here of certain kinds of movies that usually have a superhero cape attached to it, but beyond that, it's a little difficult to get people excited about a well-made film.
Yeah.
So there comes with some education. It's not just promoting the latest popcorn, you know, tentpole flick, as they call them.
Yeah.
Getting people excited about coming out and experiencing something different than a superhero movie. I'm there. I go see those things all the time. I love them. I'm actually a comic book reader, so all the more so I'm there seeing the latest Marvel picture. So I'm not poo-pooing, you know, big budget tentpoles. I just think there's a greater variety of movies that can be enjoyed.
So what were the first movies because obviously there's probably been an evolution over time of what you've presented. So what were the first movies you kind of threw out there, and then what did you learn from that experience? It's
pure art film. I mean, nice. You know, you've got independently released stuff, and certain people, you know, like Tarantino, at least when he started out, was an independent filmmaker. Mm-hmm. People flocked to those things, obviously. Right. But You're talking about pure art cinema or independent cinema.
Like 3 hours of a guy eating cold tomato soup.
Yeah.
The word fin at the end.
I don't necessarily think those make good movies either, but no, I'm not a slice of life guy personally, but people like the Nomad Lands of the world. I like something with a little bit more plot and cinematic flair. although it was well shot, I will say that. So yeah, it's just finding that sweet spot of what one people are awareness about. There's a general, it seems to be lack of awareness about cinema in Vancouver. I mean, the IMDb app is readily available on everybody's phone, but I talked about it and they like, they don't even know about it. I'm like, how do you not know about IMDb? This is just second nature to me. But again, I was in Southern California for 10 years. I mean, I've been using that app since, or not the app, but the website since the late 90s. So, yeah, like I said, there's just the level of importance of cinema to people here is not too great.
Yeah.
That's the biggest learning curve. So, to go back to your question, I think Pina was one of the first movies I showed.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually released in 3D, which I didn't have that capability. Movie about dance, contemporary dance. A big movie we had was Beasts of the Southern Wild. It was actually up for Best Picture and Oscar that year. But
oh, yeah.
Probably came and left and not on anybody's radar. Mm-hmm. Well-made film. I don't know. There's a handful of independent content out there. Getting movies is not the problem. Well, but the awareness, getting awareness out there. I can't be a one-man marketing machine.
Mm-mm.
And the independent studios cannot have that sort of market penetration. Like, everybody knows what Shang-Chi is. You don't have to, you know, everybody's heard of it or has some understanding that it's out there. It's a comic book movie and it did really well.
Well, I want to hit more on the movie selection process because I think that's really important. I'll talk a little bit about Up North, but really quick, we're going to pause. We're going to head to some sponsor information, some station identification, but
goods and services.
But we'll be right back here with Dan.
Programming like this is brought to you through the generous support of our founding sponsors at ADCO, Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at adco1.com. That's adco1.com.
KXRW would like to thank Craft Cannabis, our exclusive cannabis sponsor, for supporting our radio community. Their wide variety of products range from edibles, pre-rolls, concentrates, vapes, CBD topicals, tinctures, and much more. Craft Cannabis for 21 and over now has two locations in Vancouver. The newest shop is on Andreessen Road off Patton Parkway next to Home Depot. The Mill Plain location is in the Heights Shopping Center. Ordering options include online, in person, curbside, and express window touchless pickup to better serve you. Hours and information available at craftcannabis.com.
I told you we'd be back.
Yep, we are back.
You're not a liar.
Yeah, that would have been one time just to jump and go, right?
We're out.
Yeah. You know, before we went to break, you were talking a little bit about movie selection and whatnot, and about using it especially as a way to kind of like educate the area if they don't know much about, you know, the movie industry or certain movies that are out, artistic movies, etc. I lived up in Tacoma for the longest time, and there's a lot of independent theaters up there. And one method they were really using when doing this was playing movies that had to do with, you know, that specific area. So Maltese Falcon was a big one up in Tacoma because it premiered in Tacoma. It was shot up in Tacoma. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it.
We've showed it.
Oh, there you go.
Recently.
Oh, there you go. And so it's once again, it kind of adds to that experience of, you know, they're not only coming in to watch a movie, but they're coming in to watch a movie that has historical relevance to the area, you know, the state, the Pacific Northwest, however you want to view it at that term, for that experience. And so when you're selecting movies, does that ever come into play? Like, you're trying to find things that are perhaps relevant to the area that
absolutely.
We're in right now?
And again, we're in weird times. Nothing, kind of all bets are off right now.
Right.
But mm-hmm.
Before times, yeah, absolutely. If something came along, we just wrapped up showing The Nowhere Inn. It's got Carrie Brownstein in it.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
obviously got a local connection with Portlandia. And
yep.
We thought it might do better. But again, we're in strange times right now. But if there's a local star, a hero is a good one. We had Sam Elliott. And
yep.
Kind of an off the beaten path role for him. A little bit playing himself somewhat. We knew that'd be a hit.
Because
right. He's got Vancouver connections, right? Mm-hmm. Went to Clark College and I guess lived here a little bit. So
I think
know
so, yeah.
Yeah, 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 for a little while.
And we know that Sam Elliott's a many a lady like.
So, he's got that voice.
Yes. Yeah. And the mustache.
Don't yeah, and the
mustache. That's right.
Or, you know, if it's Native American themed, and, you know, we had things we called them, they're not actually genres, but our genres that worked. Anything that was lit based. Vancouver's a very well read community. I mean, they're into their novels.
Right.
So if it was an adaptation of a novel, if it was about writing, like The Wife did really well with Glenn Close, we knew those were kind of good, safe choices that people are going to come out to. Anything outdoorsy related, running, hiking, climbing, swimming.
Mushrooms.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a strong community that not only loves outdoors, but will come and sit and watch a movie about the outdoors, and it's probably the one time they are actually indoors.
Yeah.
So those are in, especially the festival stuff, Banff.
Yep.
Warren Miller ski films. Those tend to do really well. We partner with the Source Climbing Gym up the street every year, kind of around their anniversary, but we show obviously some climbing oriented film.
Right.
That's a hit with that community. So, there's certain things that we know do pretty well. It's like anything, you know, it's like, are you just a place that'll serve any kind of food and have a menu of just 100 right. different items, or are you going to try to tailor it and have a level of quality and things? I mean, I say that and we play Rocky Horror Picture Show. I mean, that is not a great movie, but I think it's a fun experience.
Oh, it's
well, yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of folds into the next phase that I'd seen with the theater, which you had this kind of, you started off with this programming and, you know, you're programming the films on a regular basis, but then you started to have kind of more thematic, events related to, like, you know, the Rocky Horror. I think you did some Harry Potter,
yes,
you know, events. You did you did things around film series and significant dates and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about the evolution of that?
Yeah, I mean, it just comes out of the fact that we think every movie is like going to an event, but you have to enhance it a little bit and make it really an experience that stands out. So if it's even something like, we used to do Princess Bride every year around Thanksgiving, and right. we have an author come in and read a little bit from the book that was based on. Harry Potter thing is a huge hit even long after the books have been, you know, off the shelves. So we built a whole fest around Harry Potter's theoretical birthday of July 31st.
Okay.
Show all eight movies, but we don't want to just show all eight movies because anybody, any theater can do that.
Yeah.
Right.
We want to serve, we have a butterbeer bar and, you know, different people and characters going around. We had Pettigrew's popcorn. She would come and read your little popcorn kernels in the bottom of your bag. I myself was known to dress up a time or two, different characters, you know, wand making, you know, just to enhance the whole experience and make it.
Right.
Yeah.
So the idea is here just to be Disneyland as much as we can yeah. when you come into the Kickens. And even if it's just a movie, there's an experience there and a specialness. When you're walking under the railroad berm in Disneyland, welcome to the land of yesterday, tomorrow, and imagination okay. or fantasy, I believe is the right quote. And so to me, that's going to the movies.
Yeah,
I don't come to the movies to experience the present or the mundane or what's going on right now, even reality, obviously. My love in the movies, going back from my little kid to now, is I want to have that Disneyland experience. I want to experience yesterday, tomorrow, and fantasy.
So when you're providing those experiences here in Vancouver, are you taking some of those cultural elements from your time spent in Hollywood and bringing it forward, or is it above and beyond that?
Gosh, you know, I mean, it probably makes some people cringe to hear I'm trying to bring a little Hollywood to Vancouver. Again, I had a great time down there. I love not only California history, I love Hollywood history and film right. history. And part of that is when you go to film school, you've got three different kind of columns that you hit. It's film history, film theory, and film production. Like, how do you make movies? What can we learn from prior things that have been done? And then the theoretical stuff, which to me all applies to what I'm doing. Even the psychology, like I've kind of referred to watching a movie. I mean, it's not the technology, it's not the size of the screen, although that helps.
Yeah.
Or, you know, having Dolby Atmos and all that kind of stuff. But it's the psychology of the shared group experience, that comedies are going to be funnier with a group, you know, horror movies are going to be scarier. It's not just the big budget action thing that's going to be more fantastical because right. you watched it in a room full of better tech that you can afford at home. And there's also the psychology, and this is getting a little bit too deep geek. You can cut me off anytime you want, but I'm not excited about television primarily because you've got a light source that's hitting you directly in the eyes. That's not the experience you get at a theater, as watching a screen with an image projected off of it and reflected back on you.
It'd be interesting for a study when all that comes out and about to see how those experiences differ when you have that direct and indirect.
Yeah, and I was a little worried about the transfer from going from film print projection to digital projection.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, the benefit is that you've got the same nice high quality print to watch every time. You don't have emulsion scratches and sound pops and things that deteriorate with a film projection screening. But there was a specialness and a magic to film, mainly because it wasn't a electronic image, right? Mm-hmm. It was a naturally occurring, it's a photograph.
Yeah.
24 frames a second. And to talk about theory a little bit, we perceive it's not actual motion. It's not an actual motion picture. It's a series of pictures that's perceived as motion
mm-hmm.
because of your persistence of vision. You can remember an image up to a third of a second for when it leaves, because there's actually blank frames or time in between each projected image. You don't realize that because your eye doesn't perceive it.
Yeah. Brain's filling in all the gaps.
Exactly.
So then again, you were evolving you had the programming, and then you have, you know, some of the specialized programming and events. And then there was this addition where the Kiggins has started to become a center of like community and culture and conversation. When did the live event stuff start to come in, and what was kind of the impetus for that?
Sustainability. I enjoyed it too. I mean, even Richard, who programs all our movies, likes we need variety. We have a famous saying we tell our staff, no week is like the next.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something different happening. Not just change over the menu of the movies, but different events are happening. History on Tap made one of them.
Yep.
So it brings a variety and a vitality, just keeping it fresh. I mean, because when you're in a multiplex, especially this is what people don't realize, when you book a big budget movie like a Shang-Chi or a Venom or something, you have to keep that on screen for 2 weeks and what they call clean. Like, you're not putting that in with anything else mm-hmm. on that screen. This is where coming into being a single screen theater is a challenge, because we can't vary that up. We've got to run it for 7 days at least minimum mm-hmm. with nothing else showing. So it interrupts all those events.
Yeah.
So, you know, we decide to do something with Disney. I mean, we're locked up for at least 2 weeks.
Yep.
Wow. And doing nothing else. That to me can be a little bit of a, I don't know. I'm sure you're financially, your pocketbook's nice, but it's not very inspiring.
What was the first venture into live events you had?
Oh gosh. I mean, they really weren't, I didn't have to go out and seek them. They came to me.
Mm-hmm.
I had early talks with Amanda from Science on Tap, then with OMSI mm-hmm. called Science Pub. We didn't have the ability to serve beer at the time, at least in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bit of a deal breaker for that model of show. But I had conversations with her back early on. And she eventually morphed and evolved into Science on Tap. We had a number of one-off events, private rentals, mm-hmm. things, you know, whatever anybody could dream up with the space. And I learned this from my soda shop days. I mean, I had this nice big space with a stage and a screen and sound and, you know, hey, you dream it up. Let's try it. Let's do it. It's as long as it's fun and entertainment, and I'm up for it, even if it's not. And that's the community aspect. You know, obviously we want to be inclusive of everybody and everything that we can do, but we want to make sure that we maintain focus that does kind of fit my passion, my mission, and that's to provide that fantancy and escape.
So were the first ones like Hello Vancouver and Van Talks for the sustainable ones?
Hello Vancouver is fairly early. I think we started that in 2013. Van Talks came a little bit later. Kevin wanted to do something a little bit more TED Talks. In fact, I think he was trying to host a TED Talks and
mm-hmm.
found out the licensing was a little too insurmountable, and generated his own, which actually turned out to be a better product. It was a happy accident, I believe, that we had something hyper-local
mm-hmm.
That's specific to here and can't happen anywhere else.
Yeah.
So yeah, that came along. That's great. That's a once-a-year event, or at least used to be. Hopefully we'll be back. Design Vancouver,
yep.
Started by the Brif Creative. That was great. Actually led to one of the highlights of my life here at Kiggins. Able to host a screening of Solo with the producer of the film was in town giving a lecture as part of this design conference, Rob Rito, and he was the producer of the film. And got to have him on stage after screening the film and interview him. That was one of the best moments I've ever had at Kiggins, because it was a live event. It was a unique event, local, obviously, but movies too. And Star Wars.
So you had all this going. You had, you know, your programming, your you know, yearly kind of events around certain movie series. You had live events. You had all this thing happening, and then, bam, pandemic hits. You go to virtual screening. You're shut down. You sell popcorn. But also during this period, you took the opportunity to kind of spruce up the place. So talk a little bit about that work.
Oh, yeah. Became a little bit of a contractor in my own right. Generally, that was something I'd reach out and hire contractors for, but, you know, didn't necessarily have the revenue stream happening to make that happen.
Right.
Had a lot of time on our hands, and I can paint very reasonably well. So that's the majority of what we did is a lot of repainting. Start looking and we're like, what hall can we repaint? The big thing we're proud of is the stairwell leading up to the lounge upstairs, the Marquee Lounge. actually restored it to its historical pattern, if you will. I don't necessarily know the colors because we've only got black and white photos. Was able to uncover one of those colors and kind of base a palette off of that, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. You need to come into the building to see.
Well, and you know, the theater has deep history, and you've connected with that, and you've had some of that history, you know, shared with you. So obviously, you know a little bit about J.P. Kiggins. Talk a little bit about what you've learned about, aside from, you know, the bit that I said.
Sure.
What have you learned about Kiggins?
Oh, he was a good old boy, like any politician person was back then. One of the funny stories I've heard, and hopefully Denny, who's still, Denny is J.P.'s grandson, who's still around. I believe he's a commissioner of utilities or something up in Isabel. So, I'd heard all about J.P., and I said, what did your dad do? You know, I never hear about the son, or at least, and I think he had multiple kids, but anyway, he kind of chuckled. And he said, well, he didn't do a whole lot of anything. I'm like, what are you talking about? And this relates back to J.P. He goes, well, you got to understand, my grandpa at that time was probably the wealthiest guy in town. He was like the Jeff Bezos of Vancouver. He owned a lot of real estate. He did a lot of business, not just this movie theater, but several movie theaters. And then he was a well-to-do guy. So he left an inheritance enough to where the kids didn't have to work.
nice.
Yeah. The idle rich, if you will. But I don't think Denny's that way. Denny's like a pretty hard worker. Just retired. So I always thought that was kind of a funny story. People don't realize that level of like, wow, Vancouver had somebody operating at that strata of the economy. We've got a lot of remnant, you know, from that. So we've got a
And Dave Hilborn did the Kiggins Theater too. Yep, I mean, exactly. JP throughout his career engaged with Hilborn quite a bit. And Hilborn, you know, for those who don't know, is, you know, one of the most significant architects in 20th century Vancouver. He did Kiggins Theater, Clark County Courthouse, Medical Arts Building. The Muchos Gracias Building.
Formerly Spick and Span.
His claim to fame.
Yes.
The Muchos Gracias Shack.
right next to the Brick House Pub.
Yeah, if you actually go onto the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation's website and, you know, look for a Day Hilborn list, there is a massive list of projects. I mean, he was involved in so much. So aside from Kiggins, there were other people that were significant to the theater's history. And so one was a projectionist that you had
Gordon,
learned about.
Yes, and his last name's escaping me. He was there for a good 30-year run, I believe, up through the 90s. And what's significant about him is he actually operated the original carbon arc projectors, and that's the technology that was the going concern back in the 30s when the theater opened, was there wasn't bulbs or lamps, they call them, bright enough to project this image from a film print. And so they would basically strike I don't know if you've seen like a welder, like an arc welder. It's essentially what it was. It was two carbon rods with a spark in between it.
Wow. That sounds super safe.
Oh, yeah. It was totally safe. I mean, it's in this housing. You can come see it. We've got one of the original number one projector. There used to be two of them. It was called a changeover.
And the film wasn't super flammable either, right?
It was
right?
Silver nitrate flammable.
Silver nitrate.
Yeah. Highly flammable, parked about 18 inches away from this open flame.
So I got an idea. Let's spark some flames next to this super flammable material.
Yeah, just see Inglourious Basterds or an even better film, Cinema Paradiso, an Italian, actually won Best Picture, 89, for foreign language film. So it's all about this little boy and his love of cinema and his relationship with his projectionist. So it's very special. But anyway, Gordon ran the theater projection booth for about 30 years. And alongside him, downstairs, managing everybody else, was Popcorn Betty Howard. And Popcorn Betty Howard is pretty special. She kept the place up and going as best she could. You know, there's a lot of memories and stories about her that, oh, I got yelled at by Popcorn Betty. Or, you know, even as an employee, like, man, she was a real taskmaster, but kind of kept them on their toes and watched over them and kind of, you know, mother henned them a little bit too and was really a mentor in that way. But this poor woman was basically having to run babysitting central all weekend long. Parents would just pull up to the curb, throw the kids out with a few bucks, and it was Betty's job after that. Gosh, can you imagine? I mean, back then the theater sat 500-600 people. Bunch of kids in there, in and out all day long.
Can I still do that now? Can I just drop my kids off? You guys watch them.
Drop whoever you want off these days because we got a lot of empty seats.
That's awesome. I can just imagine her like trying to run it and all these kids running around her trying to keep everybody seated. You know,
watch one of the funniest stories, and this is not. Somebody actually told me the story. I wish I had like documented word for word, but at one point she stopped the movie. And this isn't like pressing pause on your Blu-ray player. This is stopping a film print that's running in front of a hot lamp. I mean, even though it was safety film, it wasn't going to burn up, but it's still, I mean, you just don't stop these things in the middle.
Yeah.
But she stopped it, turned the lights up, went in there, yelled at everybody. Her words told by this individual to me, "I don't come to my house and put my feet on your furniture. Take your feet off my seats." So if there ever was a captain of the Kiggins, it was Captain Ben.
Oh, my. That sounds like the ultimate flipping the light switch on and off move.
Yeah. Ever. So I have an important question for you as we're wrapping, you know, towards the end of this. I want to talk about the possible worst film ever.
Oh, gosh.
Ever.
Well, that's like trying to pick the best film ever.
I know. It's so hard. And
a top five terrible films.
Well, we were told in film school, Robot Monster was always the sort of the number one. Yeah. Look it up. It's fun. It's got the 1,000 or the 1,000,000 bubble machine in it or something. Anyway, it's not good, but it's great. You know, of course, there's The Room. The Tommy Wiseau. I definitely would throw Rocky. I hate to bash my own programming, but I definitely would put Rocky Horror Picture Show in there. That movie makes no sense. But people love it, so I continue to show it. Oh, gosh, what else?
I often watch a lot of like classic films with some of my friends who live up north now. But like, there's some that they can't stand that are considered like the greatest film. Like Citizen Kane is one of those. Like, it takes a certain mindset to understand what's going on.
I need a contextual mindset. You need a little bit of setup, you know, this far removed. What did we just, 70 years, 80 years? Where are we at?
Right,
1941, that is. So yeah, actually, I was just at the Academy of Motion Picture Museum that just opened this week. I was there on Friday. Okay. And the first thing you walked in is a tribute to Orson Welles' Citizen Kane. And Rosebud, the sled is there.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Gosh, if you haven't seen it, just gave away a big spoiler. But sorry, you've had 80 years.
You kind of had some time to watch it.
Yeah. And you should watch it. You know, it's an important landmark in cinema. But it does take a little context and a little education to know what you're going into. Otherwise, it could just seem like, oh, God, another black and white movie, boring. But I think the people that are a little more thoughtful in their approach, like my son, he's a little bit ahead of his game. And I can, even without setup, I'll show him stuff. And he'll know when there's deeper things happening in a movie versus not. And that's one of them I showed here in the last 5 years. And, you know, of course I explain it and I do the film professor thing with him, but, I mean, it was landmark. I mean, people don't even realize what it was doing back then.
That contextual background, my children are relatively young, but I'm a huge Charlie Chaplin fan, and Modern Times is one of my favorite films to watch. Yeah. So, you know, my children watch it the first time, they're laughing, all the comedy, him going through the cogs and all that. But it wasn't really until my son started studying labor history that I was like, okay, let's piece this together. Let's watch it again. Let's piece it together and give you kind of the context behind. So now it's a lot more serious for him, but he still loves the comedy behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's growing into it now.
Yeah, I mean, movies should operate without, you know, a lot of setup,
right?
Obviously. But times change. Things don't seem as relevant now. But then some things seem really relevant.
Right.
Like Casablanca. To me, I keep quoting Casablanca, especially during this pandemic time. One, I always want to teach a class that there's no Raiders of the Lost Ark with Casablanca, and I don't have time to get into why, but if you watch both of those back-to-back, hopefully you'll pick it up. But the theme of both of those movies is doing something for the good of the cause over individual freedoms or desires, if you will. And gosh, does anything ring true more now than ever?
Nah.
Way off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, without milk during World War II, you know, because that was important. We've lost the ability to sacrifice.
What about you, Brad? Do you have a vote for worst movie?
Oh, is that what we're talking about? I want to talk about good movies.
Yeah. No, I'm just listening. You guys are so classy with your movie watching. I mean, I grew up on famous flicks like Sergeant Kabuki, NYPD, or Cannibal the Musical. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I unfortunately love terrible films, so I've never seen a film I didn't like. I just figure out a way.
I got one I'd throw out there that'll get me beat up. Maybe literally. Enter the Dragon. I don't know what the big deal is there. I don't know. Bruce Lee's cool, but I watch the movie and I go, okay.
I mean, I guess I'd throw Titanic out there.
What?
No, I think so good. Titanic's the most expensive student film ever made.
It is. Holy.
Not because it's bad. I'm just saying
it
was well done. I like it.
So then on the flip end, do you have a favorite film? One that you, or at least one you can go back and you can just watch over and over.
I definitely do. I've got a few of them. And I'm going to preface that with that, and perhaps it's a little bit of education training. Mm-hmm. I have a very objective good film list and a very subjective film list, because, I mean, Back to the Future is my all-time favorite.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Am I willing to admit that there's flaws in it? Yes, absolutely. Is it the most perfect movie ever made? No, of course not. But for me, it is. However, it's not in the top 10 best movies ever made. Right. It's not. And then secondarily is Network. Lost against Rocky, also a good movie for Best Picture of that year, 1976. And then third is Raising Arizona.
Oh, wow.
That's my subjective top three.
Well, do you think Back to the Future falls into the problem of the issue with like science fiction and comedies and other things like that, that they don't ever get the same level of respect as right. a straightforward drama film?
Yeah, okay. and populist stuff. You know, obviously, if it's huge at the box office, right. it's not going to be probably that Best Picture winner. Mm-hmm. There's that whole disparity, and there's certainly an argument to be made about the Academy and, you know, their picks and things. So
what about
movies are subjective, right? I mean, like I just said, that's why I like to clarify that there's stuff I really like, and there's stuff I think that's really good. And sometimes I don't even like it.
What about you? Do you have a favorite film, Brad? One or two, three, that you can go back and watch constantly?
Oh, mine are terrible. I mean, you're talking like, you know, Dumb and Dumber.
I respect some Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, yeah. I can watch that. I mean, I watch movies for escape, like you were saying, you know, to right. kind of watch something that, you know, gets my mind off things and goes off into a different world. Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I can return to that one again and again. You know, I was into the horror genre when I was young. So, you know, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, all of those I can watch, you know, time and time again. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's my go-to. Recently, it's a very terrible film, The Interview. My wife and I can watch that over and over again.
The one that almost caused World War III.
Yeah. One that almost caused, I guess that's probably what it is, as a cachet. And it's a bad film, but it's, yeah.
It just gets you.
We just watch it again and again. Yeah. I have horrible tastes in everything. Food, films,
well,
music.
I do have a guilty pleasure list also. I mean, like Clash of the Titans, if I see cruising around TV, I see that thing on, I'm stuck for the rest of the day.
The original.
Yeah, the original. Right? Not the remake.
I didn't see the remake. Gosh, for the Iron Eagle 2. It's my top all-time.
Eagle 2. Not one, but two.
Well, it actually is one. Sorry. Also, that's what I meant.
You like Legal Eagles 2?
I've never seen Legal Eagles. Or was there a part two Legal Eagles?
There's only one.
No, okay, good. Hey, you stumped me there.
It's a bad film.
Trick question. I mean, I'll take Iron Eagle over Top Gun any day of the week, because that, to me, hits all those things that people say they like about Top Gun.
For me, my number one, Singing in the Rain, is my all-time favorite movie.
Best musical ever made.
There's nothing that is not in that film. There's comedy.
It's got it all.
Oh, it's...
Yeah, I would put that in the top 10 textbook perfect. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, I'm a huge Gene Kelly fan, but so that and like Anchors Away when he's singing away with Frank Sinatra, mm-hmm. really young Frank Sinatra. But aside from that, I also grew up on horror too. I like Alien is something I can go back and just watch nonstop on repeat. I absolutely love it. But
Child's Play.
That I was just watching that last night.
Can't say Alien and Child's Play in the same. I don't care if they're both horror. Alien sci-fi horror. Yeah,
absolutely. My son loves Jurassic Park. We're a huge like original Jurassic Park number one.
Sure.
Which, you know, they're bringing back a lot of those characters for the new one that's coming out. So mm-hmm. I'm really excited for that one. But we're huge Christmas people, so I really love like classic Christmas films as well. All right. Well, thanks Dan for coming in. We appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to be.
You're welcome.
Not only in your building, but to get to hear the stories about it.
You're listening to Our Backyard. KXRW.LP Vancouver on 99.9 FM and streaming everywhere at KXRW.FM.
All right, and let's tell you a little bit about the historical happenings in November. So we have the Le Centre Historical Museum, which is open the first and third Saturdays of every month from 12 to 4 p.m. The Community Military Appreciation Committee and the Historic Trust are doing a Veterans Day ceremony on November 11th, 2021. It'll start at 11 a.m. at the Artillery Barracks on Hathaway Road, so you can check that out. The Fort Vancouver National Historic Site is also open. This includes the Visitor Center, the Reconstructed Fort, and Pearson Airfield, and it is Tuesday through Saturday, 9 to 4. And last but not least, the Clark County Historical Museum is open Thursday through Saturday, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. And if you want to check out more events, check all of these organizations out on Facebook or other socials and have a great time checking out some history.